Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tree City Sports Podcast.
We're back.
I'm here. This is Andrew Baker with my co-host, Graham Moen, as per usual.
Woo! We're back.
You know, I feel like this podcast isn't right unless I say as per usual at some point.
I mean, it's part of the lingo. It's how we do this on the Tree City Sports Podcast, the flagship podcast on the Tree City Sports Network.
The flagship podcast. Do you feel special?
I mean, it's the podcast that started it, and then we added Red and Blue later, which, by the way, Red and Blue will be coming in the coming weeks, or in the coming days as the Champions League is over, and we've had some transfers, so me and Olam have had different schedules, so get ready for one. Probably it's coming up weekend.
What's the biggest transfer just happened?
Right now, Eden Hazard from Chelsea is leaving for Real Madrid. It was kind of a foregone conclusion.
He's defensive mid?
He's a left wing.
Left wing. Wow. This is my contribution to our soccer podcast. So, on to stuff I know.
To put it into basketball terms, he was the LeBron of the Chelsea team. He had to do everything.
You know who can't do everything is Steph Curry. I'm sorry.
I mean, he tried his hardest.
So, the Raptors won Game 3 of the NBA Finals in Golden State.
It was like 127-109 was the final score.
Yeah, so no KD still, and he's out for Game 4 now, which we will discuss. No Klay Thompson for Game 3. He will be back for Game 4.
Yeah, so, that was the biggest storyline in Game 3 was the fact that he was out and the pressure put on Steph Curry. Just because, you know, we talked about it during the series before it started about how really those are the only two guys that can really create their own shot and are really guys that can stretch the floor. Now, granted, they're two of probably the best five shooters of all time.
And Klay is not really a big shot creator. He's more of a catch-and-shoot guy.
Yeah.
But I think it's the floor spacing that was really the problem for them.
I mean, yeah, and also it's also the defense because, I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit, but the Warriors' defense was horrendous in Game 3, and he's probably their best perimeter defender outside of Draymond, and Draymond was pretty much stuck having to guard everybody in Game 3 just because, well, he's the best defender they have left, and that's – we talk about Klay Thompson missing. People are not going to talk about it much, but Kevon Looney's missing time, and he might not be back for the rest of the series.
Yeah, I think the Warriors' defense, we can start there, I guess. I think
it was horrible.
I think it was not great, obviously, but I think it was more a lack of talent and great shot-making by Toronto than it was a lack of scheme or effort for Golden State. I think that Golden State, for the most part, was playing pretty within itself. I just think Toronto, that was one of the most impressive performances I've seen by Toronto. Obviously, Toronto's defense was, you know, a much easier task for them just due to the fact that Golden State was missing so much firepower. But, you know, Toronto had 30 assists, and that's like a Golden State level of assists. I mean, we're used to seeing Golden State being a team that whips it around.
Yeah.
Toronto, you know, really got a lot of open looks, but they worked hard for them. And there were stretches where they kind of got, you know, in those little periods where Kawhi is just pounding the rock or whatever. But I think Kyle Lowry had probably the best game I've ever seen him play, and certainly the biggest stage he's ever been on. And I think if there was ever a game where you look at Kyle Lowry and you say, like, this has to be the game.
Because,
you know, he's been primarily guarded by Klay Thompson, and he's struggled in the finals so far for the first two games.
Mm-hmm.
I think if there was ever a time where you say, look, first of all, Toronto had to win that game. If Toronto lost Game 3 without Klay, I just think the series is probably over at that point.
Yeah, because that's pretty demoralizing when all you really have to worry about in terms of scoring and shot creation is Steph Curry. And if you can't beat them doing that, then I don't know what to tell you. You're not talented enough to get to that point.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. And I think, like I said, if there was ever a time where it's like, look, Kyle Lowry has an opportunity now ahead of him to have a monster game. And Kyle Lowry was phenomenal. I mean, Kawhi had 30 points. He had the ultimate, you know, Kawhi game.
Where
you barely even notice him, but oh, there he is. I don't think Kawhi had a dominant defensive performance. I think Kyle Lowry was clearly Toronto's best player in Game 3.
I mean, with
and that's good for Kyle Lowry because he's failed a lot on the largest stages, and I think some of that has been due to matchups, some of that has been due to his team around him, but some of that has just been due to Kyle Lowry. And I think, you know, first and foremost, good for him because it was a monster performance.
I think he definitely got better as the game went along. Because early in the game when Steph Curry was getting all those open shots, and early in the game, the Warriors offense was really moving really well. They were getting a lot of spacing and they were able to get good screens and good picks off of plays to get those curls open, where the things where Steph loves to run around and get the ball and just chuck it. And he had 17 points in the first quarter, and that was a serious problem. I mean, the Warriors were only down 6 points at the end of the first quarter, and they had scored 28 points. The Raptors' defense really didn't show up in the first quarter either. It was like a 33-27 first quarter. Like that's,
it was almost like a feeling it out quarter for both teams in a sense.
Yeah, like you could definitely tell Toronto didn't know how to play the team. I mean, the most obvious answer is you just put all your resources into Steph Curry and try to block him. But early in the game, I think kind of like the NFL, how they're scripted plays, I think they had ideas in mind for how to get Steph open and get him going. And to Steph Curry's credit, he was very aggressive. He was taking his shots. He was getting to the hole, and he was also distributing in that first quarter with great success. And even in the second quarter, he played pretty well. And at halftime, he already had like 20 points. So he was doing his part. But the problem is that when you don't have Kevin Durant, which you haven't had, but then you add into the fact that you don't have Klay Thompson, who is probably, in my opinion, the most underappreciated out of those four Warriors, out of those big four, just because he's had to sacrifice the most. People forget how good of a knockdown shooter he is, how good of a player he is defensively, and just how important he is to that team. Because when you only have those two guys as main shooters, but those two, like I said, are two of probably the best five shooters ever to play, that creates a lot of problems for teams, because now instead of having to put all your resources into one guy, it's two. And then that opens up the lanes that the Warriors love so much, where they do all the cutting and the different picks and the different backside cuts and all those different issues that their offense has created for teams for the last 5 years.
Well, clearly, I think floor spacing has been the key to unlocking the Warriors' offense for all these years, because like you said, their offense is totally predicated on ball movement, cutting, screening, all that kind of stuff. And none of that is really possible without floor spacing, which is what we saw in game three. I think before we move on to the Warriors, I do have something to say about Klay Thompson. I totally disagree with one thing you said, but I think you're right about Kyle Lowry in the first quarter. He wasn't really having a great game. Pascal Siakam came out and had a really, really good first quarter and first half. Yeah. And I think
he was really aggressive.
Siakam and Lowry are the two players on the Raptors who are, I think, their two most important players, because I think Kawhi is kind of just Kawhi. I mean, Kawhi gets his points. He plays good defense. But Kawhi is not a LeBron-level playmaker, obviously.
Right. That's probably his biggest weakness. Right. That he's like an average to above-average playmaker.
Right. And so Kawhi is going to get his points. He's going to have a good game. But Toronto has to get scoring and offensive creativity from other sources. And Siakam had 6 assists. I'm not sure how many assists Lowry had, but I know he had a great game. And the point is, early on, Siakam really, really took a hold of the game early. And then in the second half, Kyle Lowry dominated. And by the way, Serge Ibaka in the fourth quarter.
He looked like old Serge Ibaka.
No, I literally thought I was watching Hakeem Olajuwon, dude. It was insane.
He
had like 6 blocks in the fourth quarter, and half of them were goaltends, but we can look past that.
Yeah,
but I think
true. The
point is here, good for Kyle Lowry, but also without some of the matchup nightmares out there for the Raptors pretty much just played their game. And there wasn't enough resistance from the Warriors because there just wasn't enough talent there.
Yeah.
And if Siakam's able to, you know, just get to the rack at will, if Lowry's out here just balling, you know, the Raptors are a pretty deep team. The Raptors have Danny Green, not to mention Danny Green,
who's like his 18 points.
Danny Green is just, it's the finals. So he's awoken from his slumber and he's having an incredible finals. That's what he does.
Yeah, I mean, he's made some huge shots in his career.
Tons.
With elite defenders on him. So, I mean,
the point is,
it's perfect for him.
The point is, Toronto has, you know, I think Toronto's lacking a supreme number two option.
Yeah.
And so I think when the Warriors are at full strength, you know, no shit, it's hard to beat them. But I think when the Warriors are at full strength, Kawhi can only do so much.
Yeah.
Because Kawhi's not, you know, a really big assist guy. So he's going to get his points and play good defense. But the Raptors have to get other guys to step up. And if the Warriors are going to be at full strength, that's going to be really hard. But which, again, sounds super obvious. But the point is, with the Warriors not at full strength, it's really perfect for the Raptors, even more so than maybe it would have been for other teams, because those role players have opportunities to just tear it up. And Fred VanVleet kind of shadowing Steph Curry, I really didn't expect that because I didn't think of VanVleet as like a really supreme defender.
Yeah.
But they've pretty much just forced Curry and VanVleet to be the matchup. And it seems like a massive mismatch for Golden State, but Van Vliet keeps Curry, you know, moving off the ball on defense, and he hassles him enough on the other end that Curry has to work for his points. But yeah, onto the Warriors.
I mean, I think the biggest thing for him is that Fred Van Vliet makes him uncomfortable, which I think the only time we've really seen another player of like a role player do that is like when Dela Vadova did it for the Cavs. Like it's
these type of guys,
I feel like that are really high energy players, players that are going to get up in your face, players that are going to make you work for everything, that bothers Curry. And when you see Fred Van Vliet do it, you saw Matthew Dela Vadova do it when they played the Cavs. I don't think it was as much as those two players have the defensive prowess to always hang with him. I think they just make him work really hard for all the points he's going to get. Yeah. And if you tire out Steph, that's a big deal because you don't want him to be pretty fresh going into the fourth quarter and have his legs under him, because then he's just going to pull up from 30 and you can't stop those shots.
That you just led perfectly into one of my next points. And this is – I'm not here to trash Steph Curry because he had, 47 points?
Yeah, he had an amazing game.
He had an efficient 47 points.
Yeah, he was unbelievable.
And it's absolutely not his fault they lost the game. He was really good.
Yeah, he tried everything.
But you also see that when he has to, you know, take an offensive burden like that, his defense really suffered. He had a very poor defensive performance.
And he's never been a great defender, so that makes it right. – that highlights it even more.
He's been an average performer on defense.
That's always been his biggest weakness.
My point is – you know, so Steph had like 1 of 6 shooting in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and talk about the announcers forever because everyone knows that Van Gundy and Mark Jackson are pretty mediocre. But the entire fourth quarter, all they were talking about was how Steph Curry really wanted this. And he's playing hard and it's an incredible performance and all this. And I just don't know. And this will also go into a point that I have about Klay Thompson is this Warriors team has been in this bubble where they've always had so much talent that one guy is never really going to be to blame for anything, and one guy is never going to have to shoulder this big a load. And we're seeing for the first time since, you know, before Kevin Durant got there, but even before Kevin Durant got there, they had a lot of good role players.
Right.
And this Warriors team is now, you know, on the later stages of their cycle where, you know, Livingston has gotten old.
Iguodala
is getting old. Even though he's still good, he just can't have such a big burden
anymore.
He's just
really hobbled now.
Right, and they've got some injuries. And I think for the first time, we're seeing the limitations of Steph Curry. And it's not that he didn't have a great game, because Steph Curry was the only reason they were anywhere close in that game.
Yeah.
But he had a poor defensive performance.
Yeah.
And he's not able to shoulder a load in terms of playmaking or defensively if he's going to be asked to, you know, be the clear and away number one scorer. And I think – you know, you look at Draymond Green. Draymond Green had an okay game, but that's the thing about Draymond Green is Draymond Green's the guy that's going to be playing defense, rebounding, passing. We all know that scoring is not his thing. So if you're missing Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant, Draymond Green's not the guy that's going to step up and score you 20-some points. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But again, it shows his limitations. One more thing for Klay Thompson. You said that you think Klay Thompson has probably sacrificed the most out of all the Warriors. And I disagree with that point strongly. And it's a point that other people have made as well. And the reason I say I disagree about it is because I think Klay may have sacrificed the most in terms of, you know, obviously if it's he or Steph, he's the one that's drawing the more, difficult defensive matchups. He's playing, you know, he's guarding the opponent's, you know, best wing player for, you know, a lot of stretches.
He also doesn't get that many shots.
He doesn't get that many shots.
Because they have KD and Steph.
Yes, but this is the thing about Klay Thompson is he's kind of like Draymond Green, where his role on this Warriors team, when it's fully healthy, is literally the perfect role for him. I'm sure he could have been scoring more points for other teams, but Klay Thompson being that guy who just catches and shoots, and Klay Thompson gets so many open shots as a result of Steph Curry being on the floor, Kevin Durant being on the floor, Draymond Green passing the ball, the Warriors offense. My point is, it doesn't make the Warriors any less great as a team, because they're one of the best teams in NBA history the past few years, and there's no debate about that.
Yeah.
But I think saying that, you know, Klay Thompson has had to sacrifice so much, or, you know, Draymond Green has had to, you know, sacrifice so much, whatever, or Steph Curry has been the best player in the NBA, I think if you look at this team now without, you know, certain players, and again, any team missing key pieces will struggle, especially on this stage. But that's the point is, The Warriors have always had so much talent that if one guy has an off game, it doesn't really matter that much. Or, you know, Klay Thompson has the perfect role for him. Draymond Green has the perfect role for him. And I think part of what has made these Warriors great is not just the talent, but the fit. And again, you're seeing now, you know, without certain pieces, the whole thing kind of just falls apart. And that's not to say they can't win game four, especially if Klay comes back without Kevin Durant. And it's not to say they might not still win this finals. My point is, these guys have had the perfect situation carved out for pretty much each of them. And they deserve credit for fitting that all together, because a lot of those reasons aren't just because the coaches said, here, Klay, go spot up over there. It's because they're really smart players. But my point is, they have all had almost the perfect role for this Warriors team for the majority of their careers, and not a lot of players get to say that. That's my point.
I think to counter it, I think the reason I say that about Klay is because if you look at these games, he is capable of doing more than he was given in his role when all of them were fully healthy. Because sure, Kevin Durant is able to score on his own. Curry is able to score on his own. Draymond initiates the offense, and that just kind of leaves Klay as the odd man out because he's not the ball distributor of all of them. He's not the elite off the dribble guy like both Kevin Durant and Steph Curry are. But we saw when Kevin Durant went out and they were playing in the playoffs and they were doing really well without Kevin Durant. Klay Thompson was showing up and being that second scorer, which he did in 2015 and 2016 for the Warriors. Even when they lost in that final to the Cavs, Klay Thompson is able to do a lot more things than I think people realize. And I think the reason people underestimate him or undervalue him is because he hasn't had to show those skills. Because like you said, he was put into a role that was good for him. I guess my point is I value him higher than what his role is for this team. And I think he is able to perform at a higher level than he is given the opportunity to when they are fully healthy. Because like you said, if one of them has an off night, they can do it. But I think you've seen his ability to score in bunches, his ability to get to the rim, which is probably his most improved skill since he got into the league when he was, like you said, pretty much just a spot up shooter. And he's able to get to the rim now and get off the dribble and at least create shots for himself because of his length. And on top of that, he's become one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. I don't think that's something that we can understate.
Yeah, I think
he isn't given the credit he deserves because I think people don't remember how talented and how good he was in 15 and 16 when those teams were, when they were starting this cycle.
I guess my point is, everyone in the Warriors has been given their due credit over and over and over again. And I'm actually kind of tired of hearing about how no one has gotten enough credit, because they've all gotten just an insane amount of credit from every source. And I'm not saying they don't deserve it, but I just think to say, well, now look, you see how underrated Klay is. But it's like, we all know that Klay is as good as Klay has been. There's not really anyone out there saying that Klay is not, you know, a potential all NBA player. Like, if I asked you right now, is Klay Thompson a Hall of Famer? What would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. So would I.
No question.
And it's not – no.
He retired today.
There's no one that's going to say no. My point is, yes, he sacrificed, you know, being able to score more points or be a more primary option on team's offense. But his role is that where it's his most efficient role. You know what I'm saying? It's the perfect role for him where he's scoring. He gets a bunch of open shots. You know, defensively, he matches up great with a lot of teams. I'm just saying – I understand what you're saying about him sacrificing potential points, but he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's about to get a max contract. He's in the perfect role for him. So sacrifice, yes, but I really doubt that Klay Thompson would have it any other way if you could tell him at the start of his career how it would go. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't think Klay Thompson's sitting here thinking, man, if only Kevin Durant would not have came here, or if only Steph Curry wasn't here, I could have been 25 points per game guy. No, he's sitting here thinking, wow, my basketball career has been almost perfectly laid out in front of me. Do you know what I'm saying?
I guess,
Draymond Green was never going to be a 20 point per game in the NBA score. Never.
And I guess to finish my point and to kind of go off of that, that is true. Draymond was never going to be a high volume scorer. He wasn't going to be a good scorer really, period.
No, having two generational shooters at the guard spots next to him is the one thing that has allowed him to unlock his best skills, which is a passing big man. And
yeah,
there's not a lot of great passing big men in the NBA anymore. And if he wasn't playing with Steph and Klay, his career would look different. He would be looked at as a guy who couldn't score enough to be a number two option on a team. Yeah. That's okay. Draymond Green's a Hall of Famer. I don't like Draymond Green really, but I don't debate that he's, you know, an all-time great defender and a Hall of Famer. I'm just saying his role is literally perfect for him. And maybe those guys, Clay and Draymond especially, would have sacrificed more points. But I don't think they're missing anything in terms of acclaim, because everyone understands how good they are. And I think their roles being so perfect for them is really an ideal scenario for both them to go into. You know what I mean?
I mean, it doesn't hurt to add Kevin Durant. So, I mean, they were running at pretty smooth levels, and Clay was like a good 20-plus per game scorer before Kevin Durant. That's all I'm saying. He is able to be a second option on a team, whereas a lot of teams, for pretty much every other team, he'd be a one or a two. And for the Warriors, he happens to be their third option most nights.
Well, and the Durant thing is fascinating. We can talk about it now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been ruled out for game four. There's only three games left after game four, and that's if the Warriors, you know, are good enough to get there, which I'm not going to sit here and write the Warriors off after three games, because I think that would be, you know, idiotic to do so. But, you know, the Kevin Durant thing is really fascinating. We all know he's a free agent, and there's a good chance he leaves there. But that aside, I mean, if he comes back, he's coming back into the middle of the finals.
Yeah.
And
he's not going to have any time to get conditioned.
I think a lot of people, including myself, assume that if the Warriors just kept it close long enough for KD to come back healthy, they'd win the series.
Yeah.
And I think I probably still think that. But look, man, like, there's no KD for game four. And DeMarcus Cousins had a really bad game three. He had a really good game two and a really bad game three.
And when you have to depend on those type of players.
And he's a complete wild card now.
Yeah.
And Looney being out is really big for the Warriors, because they pretty much have to play Cousins a lot. And Andrew Bogut was like...
And on top of that, he was one of their best defenders.
Yeah. And Bogut was shockingly competent in game three.
Yeah, that was a throwback game for him.
It was. He looks like...
That was Milwaukee Bucks Andrew Bogut in terms of his defensive performance.
So, I don't know what the question is that needs answered about Kevin Durant. I just know it's the whole situation is fascinating. I mean, what do you expect from the rest of this series? Do you have any idea how you think it's going to go? Do you think KD's going to come back in time? Too late? Do you think it doesn't matter?
I think even at this point, I mean, I'm not going to say it's too late, but they have a one game swing right now that determines that answer for me. Because if you lose game four, you're down 3-1. It's happened.
And two out of three are in Toronto.
Yeah. And then you've got to go back and play game five in Toronto. That's not a good look.
And even if Clay plays game four, we don't know how healthy he is.
Yeah, like, you might get Clay, and that's going to be a big part of the thing too, is Clay might not be able to do his usual movements, his usual cuts, because he has a hamstring injury. Mm-hmm. He does one bad move where he's going to re-injure his hamstring, and he's going to be out for the rest of the series.
And by the way, you know how Clay Thompson injured his hamstring, right?
Yeah, he was trying to get a foul call.
Desperately
he stuck his legs out trying to
get a foul call.
No, it was his fault he got the...
And that's what bothers him about the Warriors is, you know, and Steph Curry gets like... The whistle Steph Curry gets. If LeBron got the whistle Steph Curry gets, he would shoot 20 free throws a game easily. And it's just so frustrating to listen to these people say, oh, Steph Curry's such an amazing foul drawer. It's like, you know, and Steph Curry's a great player, and he had a lot of points that had nothing to do with shooting free throws in game three.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Smaller players it's going to be so much easier for them to draw fouls, because all they have to do is do that little move where they jump into the guy, which we've talked about needs to be addressed.
It's the number one thing that needs to be changed. But we've been saying that for years. It's not going to get changed. But the point being,
LeBron doesn't get calls. He's 6'8", 260.
And he doesn't do that.
But if he tried to do that, they'd be like, well, you knocked him over. That's an offensive foul.
Yeah.
So whereas Steph can get away in the current rules of the NBA, he can get away with jumping into somebody because he has a smaller frame and he is a smaller guy compared to everyone else on the floor. And that's his game. Whereas if you see LeBron try to do that, they're going to be like, all right, you're just trying to get a foul call.
And it just bothers me because he gets the softest whistle. He just gets...
James Harden gets the softest whistle, but I see your point.
Well, yes, but James Harden's entire game
is predicated on his fouls.
Exactly. And I think that's by design.
That's a lot of Steph's game, though, too, because he's getting a lot of those three-pointers that turn into three-point fouls, and then he either makes it and you get a four-point play, or he's going to get those 3 points anyway because he's a 90-plus percent free
throw. It's like I almost respect it more with Harden, because Harden's literally like, all right, how can I take advantage of the rules to literally... And it's, I don't
I mean,
really,
Steph does the same thing.
I don't
really
like
so
watch,
that's why
I really don't watch, like watch Harden, like watching Harden play. But
yeah,
I think with Steph, a lot of the fouls he gets are not even like the ones where they're shooting. Every player does that and it's horrible and it needs to change. But like there's one where he's on the ground going for a loose ball and one of the Raptors jumps near him and like grabs the ball and it's like a foul. And it's just like, why is that? There's no reason that's not a foul, but it's just because it's Steph Curry down there. You know what I mean?
It's just, yeah, it's like, it's the, that's,
everyone,
it's
everyone's,
my point exactly.
And everyone's slobbering over him going for loose balls and stuff. And my point is the team he's had around him and the situation he's been in has made his career easier than it would have been anywhere else. And that's okay.
Yeah.
he's still the best shooter in NBA history, and I'm not going to sit here and say he's not, because he is. It's just,
and he's probably one of the best point guards ever too.
People are just so quick to give credit to the Warriors, and so it just, there's almost never any blame put on any individual player. And I get it, you know, if you win three titles, there's not a lot of blame to go around. But I don't know. I think media types could be more honest in assessing the Warriors, and that's just how I feel about that. But
that makes sense.
The Durant thing is fascinating. If the Warriors win game four and Durant's back game five, I'm picking the Warriors.
Yeah, that's the entire thing about, like I said, the one game swing. If the Warriors win game four, I would say it's probably more than a coin flip chance that Durant's back game five. And if they lose game four, I don't think they're going to bring him back, because what's the point?
If Klay looks pretty healthy and the Warriors have Steph, Klay, Draymond, Iguodala, DeMarcus Cousins, and a whole bunch of scraps, that's got to be good enough to win game four at home.
Yeah.
And
even if it's a 70%.
I don't want to hear any excuses about this. Because
they've dealt with Toronto, they've gotten the injury stick. They've gotten the better end of the injury stick for years.
Over and over again.
2015, LeBron's team got completely decimated. 2016, they lost. 2017, it was just
Chris Paul.
Then 2018.
2017 was LeBron dragging.
No, 2018 was Chris Paul.
Yeah.
But 2017 was just, you know, that was probably their finals where they actually went through an entire playoffs without a bunch of players getting hurt.
Yeah. And look, injuries are part of the NBA. Right. My point is,
they can't say anything.
If you've got Steph, Klay, and Draymond, it's time to put up or shut up.
That's good enough.
Because you're at home.
Yeah.
And you know what? If the Warriors lose with those three guys out there, and again, they don't have a lot of great role players, but if you have those three guys,
you should not need
a great roster around you.
Yeah. And you have three Hall of Famers, you should be
good. It's put up or shut up time for the Warriors, and I just don't want to hear any excuses if they lose, because, you know, it's not like they're so desperately short on talent that they can't win game four at home. And yeah. I think game four might be the most fascinating game we've seen in the NBA since
probably game seven.
Since game seven of Cavs Warriors.
The 2016 finals.
Name me a game more fascinating.
Probably game seven of the Western Conference Finals last year.
Yeah, but without Chris Paul, man, I just don't know if that was ever going
to
happen.
That Houston team was in it, and it took 27 missed three-pointers in a row for them to lose.
Yeah.
All they had to do was hit three of those.
And looking back at it now, we look at the Rockets as a bunch of frauds, but at the time,
that Rockets team was the best team the Warriors ever played until now.
Well, this is the finals, so I'm saying it's more important, and that's what matters. All right, we're going to be right back with a very brief Browns update. And we are back. Also, just wanted to clarify, I hate the fact that all these finals discussions are primarily about Golden State. But you know what? When you make the finals 4 or 5 years in a row, that's how it goes.
It's five.
I love Toronto. They're a great team. They're a great city, which I'm going to visit in less than a month. They're a fantastically coached team. Nick Nurse deserves an immense amount of credit. And I cannot wait to see if they can beat the Warriors in game 4 and 5. So, the Cleveland Browns.
Before we get into our other stuff, I don't know if you saw it, but TJ Carey left practice today with a leg injury. So, it's not believed to be serious. Oh, my God.
It's June, and he's got a minor injury.
I know, but it's something to bring up, just because TJ Carey, part of our cornerback depth, maybe adds Greedy Williams to the mix, potentially. I don't know.
What were we talking about?
All I'm saying, I just wanted to bring it up because I like TJ Carey.
Okay, that's what you just wanted to say, you like TJ Carey. And so do I.
TJ Carey's a baller, man.
So, the media has been going apeshit about Odell Beckham not showing up to
voluntary workouts.
Yes, voluntary workouts. So, do you want to talk about this, and do you care?
I mean, I'll talk about it briefly but I don't care.
Okay,
just because
I don't care either.
Just because I want people to understand that
literally doesn't matter at all.
All that is important, yes, he missed the offense, and people are taking the Freddie Kitchens quote out of text where he's like, you know, I wish he was here. We installed most of the offense. But the point he was bringing up is because I think he was just tired of, pardon my language, answering fucking annoying questions about Odell Beckham, why he's not at voluntary minicamp, and is it going to affect the team going forward?
Hey, look, man, Tony Gross, he's got a quota he's got to meet, all right?
We'll get into that briefly when we talk about other stuff, but it's just annoying that people, the national media is bringing all this up to try to bring down the Browns just because the Browns are going into this year with high expectations. And Odell Beckham is such a polarizing figure that they have to do anything they can to bring him down. And
I don't even really think he's polarizing, really. He's just a good player.
I mean, he is one of the most notable players in the NFL. I mean, you ask any kid who's like 12, 13, they'll probably tell you to name NFL players. Odell Beckham's going to be one of them.
Yep.
He's polarizing in terms of the fact that he had such a interesting career at the Giants, and now they're trying to bring all of that so-called baggage to the Browns and trying to make him seem like he's like a locker room like problem, which he's not. He was working out with high professionals the entire time.
Professionals. Nice. He must have been in Colorado or LA or something.
I mean, so, hey, you do you in the offseason, Odell. But
speaking of someone who may or may not have been high, the Browns have cut their starting left tackle for the first 8 games last year, Desmond Harrison.
Was it the first 8?
Yeah, he started the first half of the year, yeah.
God, it's such a blur with Desmond Harrison just because he was so bad.
Yeah, I think he still has a lot of potential, but I guess, you know, he's had kind of character issues before, and basically he didn't show up to some activities on time, and the Browns were like, all right, we don't need you, see you later. Yeah. That's about the end of that topic, I think.
I mean, at least Greg Robinson, he might not be a great left tackle. He might be an average, above average.
I'm very interested to see how he plays.
At least he's willing to work for it. I mean, if you can't show up for basic stuff in the offseason, which that's more important, I think, is just keeping a regimen and, you know, being professional about that stuff, like showing up on time.
I show up to my job on time.
I show up to my job on time. All right. Everyone's so, I mean, Desmond Harrison, not a big loss. So the depth isn't that big of a deal.
So another player who may or may not be with the Browns. This is a very brief Browns update, by the way, because it's OTAs and nothing really matters.
Yeah, we're not going to.
It's Duke Johnson.
We're not going to have deep dives on it.
But. So basically, you know, Duke Johnson has requested a trade because the Browns tried to trade him for 2 weeks before he requested a trade.
Yeah,
and he comes to training camp and or OTAs, whatever we're doing. It's all
it's mini camp.
Mini camp. Okay, yeah, there we go. And the media is like, "So you requested a trade, huh? Do you still want to trade?" And he's like, yes, I want to be somewhere I'm wanted. Oh, Duke Johnson's a distraction. Oh, my God. And it's just like, you know, if a team tries to trade someone who's been a really good player, who accepted a long-term contract with the team and said, I want to be here, when the Browns sucked, and then signed a domestic abuser to be his replacement for the same position to do the same things he already does, I'd feel a little bit upset, too.
I mean, it's also on John Dorsey, too. John Dorsey gave him the extension. He didn't have to give him the extension. He gave him the extension because he was expecting.
No, it wasn't Dorsey extension.
It was Dorsey.
Before Dorsey.
No, it was after. Dorsey gave him the extension. It was a 3-year, $15 million contract. And I'm assuming when he got that contract, he was anticipating that he was going to have a role on the team. And he did not have a big role in the team. He only had a brief games when Freddie Kitchens became the offensive coordinator that he really got some touches. Other than that, he really wasn't involved at all, especially early on with Todd Haley, because Todd Haley loved to run Carlos Hyde into the ground.
Yeah, Todd Haley's stupid.
So, I mean, I get why Duke Johnson wants to leave. I have nothing wrong with what Duke Johnson wants. Because I like him as a player. He did a lot of things for the Browns. He was the only weapon for our team for a long time, especially in those dark years where we went 1-15, 0-16. He was our best offensive weapon. So, I mean, I don't blame him for being upset.
You
I guess my
funny?
Only
you
thing.
What's funny?
What?
It's a total side note. I just Googled John Dorsey, and the first thing that pops up is Cleveland Brown. John Dorsey considered for 2020 College Football Hall of Fame class. And all I saw was John Dorsey considered for Hall of Fame. And I was like, yep, put him in there already.
I mean, he was a great linebacker, Connecticut.
Oh, boy.
but no, I understand why Duke is upset. You know,
it was, you're right. It wasn't Dorsey extension. I should know.
Dorsey gave him the extension. So, I mean, he has even more reason to be upset because the current regime gave him money that makes him think, we believe in you, you're going to be part of this offense. And then, like you said, we signed Kareem Hunt, who has very notable domestic abuse issues. And while he's said the right things and done what he's supposed to do so far, that's got to hurt for Duke Johnson, because coming into this season before that happened, it looked like we were just going to have a Nick Chubb, Duke Johnson pairing. And I think most Browns fans would have been elated with that.
Yep.
Because you would have had the perfect balance of Chubb with his power and his running and his pretty decent receiving ability. But then you have Duke, who's just this mismatch weapon.
By the way, my boy Dontrell Hilliard looks pretty good so far, apparently.
Yeah, and maybe that's why.
To clarify here, is any of this stuff newsworthy in your mind? Aside from Harrison getting cut or whatever.
I think the only reason the Duke Johnson stuff is newsworthy is because the Cleveland media does such a bad job of covering the team.
So, no.
I think it is because I think it brings up to his point that he probably shouldn't have said what he said in the media, in my opinion, because I don't think he really needed to voice that he wanted a trade, because he had already requested a trade and that was known. It was just the media, like you said, Tony Grossi or Mary Kay Cabot. I am throwing shots at them because they're bad media people. They're asking him questions that inevitably he's going to answer, because he seems like an honest guy that wants to answer that doesn't want problems. But at the same time, they asked him a question and he answered it. I don't think he should have done that. But at the same time, he's being asked these questions by people that are just trying to drive storylines and trying to drive things that really could be considered negative for the Browns. And the last thing the Browns need right now, going into a season with high expectations for a lot of people, is these type of distractions. And I think the even most annoying part, and I think Browns fans are just going to, you're just going to have to get used to this. Baker Mayfield's going to say some stuff that's going to come off making him look like a douche, because that's just who he is. And when he said the thing about Duke Johnson, he's like, well, you know, it's self-inflicted on him. It's not really a problem for us. It's self-inflicted. He just needs to be a professional. You're going to have to get used to that with Baker. He's going to say some things that are going to rub people the wrong way, but you're going to love him regardless because of the passion he plays with. And of course, the fact that he seems like he might be the first quarterback the Browns have had in our expansion's history that's legitimately good. So I don't like the way that Baker handled that. So I think that's a reason why it could be considered newsworthy, because Baker's creating a lot of issues, I think, for himself that he doesn't need to create. And that could in turn create drama that's unnecessarily following the Browns when they really, like they've said a bunch of times, whether it's Freddie Kitchens or Baker Mayfield, they need to focus on getting better every day, learning the system, and getting ready for the season.
And this concludes our Browns, what is it, mini camp?
Browns mini camp.
Browns mini camp update. We'll be back soon to discuss the NBA Finals more, potentially some more Browns podcasts, but I'm going to try and wait as long as possible, considering basically nothing matters. It's newsworthy right now.
Yeah, and then we have other potential ideas that I don't want to give away just in case we decide to go a different direction.
We'll talk about NBA free agency. Yeah. It's going to be a wild summer, but you know we'll be here. We're going to try and keep posting every Thursday, and thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much. Make sure you subscribe to the Tree City Sports Podcast on all the different platforms, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts,
Pocket Cast. We're everywhere.
And thank you again, Anchor, for getting us all that stuff. And thank you so much.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Peace.